echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So
hello and welcome to Signs of Life with your host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. And today we will be talking about ancient knowledge of worlds beyond. If you have a question or comment for our guest tonight, the number here is 888-627-6008. Tonight's show is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. So, Bob, let's get right into tonight's show.
Yeah, and, you know, before I introduce Betty Kovach, I want to mention that she did a webinar for the foundation last night.
A fabulous webinar.
And it was a lot of good feedback, and we're going to follow up on that information on that webinar tonight. Betty Kovach received her PhD from the University of California in Comparative Literature and Theory of Symbolic Mythic Language. She has studied and taught in Europe and the United States. She served many years as chair and program chair on the board of directors of the Young Society of Claremont in California and sits on the Academic Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation, something we're very proud of. Dr. Kovach is the author of Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World, and her prior book, The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life. Welcome to Signs of Life, Betty.
Thank you. Thank you so much, both of you.
And, you know, you discuss in the new book, which we're going to be talking about, Merchants of Light, you know, the blueprint for evolutionary consciousness, and that was set out by our ancestors. And what I learned from reading the book is, you know, over tens of thousands of years, ancient mysticism and visionary experiences were periodically suppressed by the church and the state, but they always reemerged. And I'm old enough to remember the old Timex commercials, and I'm reminded of that. You know, they used to call it the watch that keeps on ticking. You know, so what is it about our nature that keeps allowing this reemergence to happen?
Well, that's a great question, because it really goes back to the human psyche or soul, whatever we want to call it, because Jung said, I love this, Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, said that when something new happens, when there is a real breakthrough in culture, it usually begins with a dream. Well, that is our answer, because the dream is structured by the organizing principles within the human psyche, like an acorn that has everything in it that it needs. It has all of the organizing principles that will develop into an oak tree if it's given all of the nourishment and environment that it needs. And this is true of our own evolution and our spiritual development. And that's why it keeps coming back, because the psyche itself, it's the most natural thing in the world for the psyche then to give us a dream, to give us a story, to give us some hint that will put us on our way again. But it's really more than that, too, because the people who already knew this and had been suppressed and repressed by the church, they knew what they had, and they wanted to hold on to it. And one of the things that has excited me a lot is to realize that our ancestors did everything they could to save this knowledge, this wisdom that they had discovered, so that we wouldn't, certainly they went underground and saved it, and then they would reemerge when the time was accepting, but they really wanted us to know what our heritage was, because they could see that organizations, such as many religions, unfortunately, do not have the techniques or the knowledge of these organizing principles. And the larger they were and the older they were, it seemed, they did everything they could to keep us from knowing those principles and trying to live our life and develop by those principles. But I think because it's the most natural thing in the world to become a full human being evolve to the ability that the human being possesses innately.
Yeah, and so they gave us the blueprints. They left us all of this information and hints, and somehow you sense that maybe they're frustrated at this point, you know, in this field of consciousness, as it were, that we're not taking advantage of it the way we should. It's as if they're saying, we did everything, we laid all the groundwork, you know, what happened, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yes, since we are divine, since we are an integral part of the creativity in the universe, we have everything in us we need to fulfill ourselves, to become all that we can be, to fulfill our potential. It's just that, for instance, with our own culture, we lost that knowledge. And it seems that without that, we're so empty. And I love the statement by the Jesus in the Nagamati text when he says that if you bring forth what is within you, in other words, if we become who we can be, then that will save us. But if we don't develop that within us, then it will destroy us. It's either we create or we destroy. And It's been a very sad journey in the last few thousand years, because that has been lost, and culture then has done everything it can to fill up that emptiness with triviality, entertainment, craziness in so many ways, anything to divert us from the fact that we are empty. And religion, unfortunately, destroyed. Religions in the West especially destroyed the techniques for us to experience cosmic consciousness or universal mind in which we live, and it's available to all of us. And our ancestors wanted us to know that, and wanted us to know how we could experience that, because we'll create different cultures, live different lives if we can experience that. Actually, if we could experience it for 3 seconds, it would change us tremendously. So,
yeah,
no, I think...
I'm sorry. I know you devote quite a bit of the book to discussions of these ancient cave cultures, and you know, to a lot of people who are not familiar with the topic, you know, ancient cave cultures and the term enlightenment seem to be a contradiction in terms. It's hard to believe that, you know, that people in the ancient cave cultures could have this knowledge that we seek today. So, I mean, what is it that we can learn from them?
Well, precisely what you've said, that has been a big shock to people. But it's unfortunate that the scholars who work in the caves collecting data, that's about what they do. And for a long time, they simply said, there's no way that we really can know. We just simply cannot make any interpretation. We don't know. But David Lewis Williams, who's an anthropologist in South Africa, who worked with the San Bushmen, he saw the similarities. He's the one who broke through, and he said, look, this is a shamanic culture. And when you enter the caves, you know that. you know that that's true. But we had to have the scholarship to prove it. And David Lewis Williams, working with a French archaeologist as well. But the funny thing is that after they published the book about the culture of the caves being shamanic, and they went back to work on the data the next summer, the other archaeologists wouldn't even mention the book and wouldn't even say anything about it. And near the end of the summer, they kind of joked about it. And that is Western scholarship. When you go against what is generally accepted, and it's usually the lowest common denominator of a reality that they can come up with, then you're ousted in a sense. So, well, I know when I went to France to the caves, there was advertisement about how we had misunderstood the cave man. And certainly that's true when we see what they have painted. And although we don't have any writing from them or ethnographic material, what we have is the painting and the caves. But with the symbols they have on the walls of the caves, with so much of what they have painted, we can see the parallel with the San Bushmen. And as I said last night, we do have ethnographic material from the San Bushmen because our people were anthropologists were there in the late 1800s and talked with San Bushmen who were also elders and shamans, and they told them what so much of their work was about. So we finally at least know that, I think. But maybe a lot of people don't know, and that's why it's so important to know that by 200,000 BCE, we had everything that we have now. So there would be no reason why they could not experience the fullness of what we all live in, and that's universal mind. They had the capacity.
We are talking with Dr. Betty Kovach, and the book, a new book, just came out, Merchants of Light, the Consciousness That is Changing the World. We're going to go to a short break. We have tons to talk about, so stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perissetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to Signs of Life. If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. And this show is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. If you have a question or comment for our guest, the number here is 888-627-6008. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Kovach. You know, Betty, we, especially in the work that we do, we're constantly talking about ways of entering altered states of consciousness, especially among people that look to communicate with deceased loved ones and so forth. And how important was this in the ancient spiritual traditions?
I think it was central. There was nothing more important, as I said last night, than to know the laws of nature and know one's own laws and work in harmony with those laws. So they saw themselves as the mediator between this dimension and the spirit dimension, that there could be no help for themselves or the community or nature herself unless they mediated the energies. So that meant that they were attempting to be in touch with the spirit world consistently. Yeah. So it was very important. And of course, techniques to do that were important. There were those who could easily go into altered state of consciousness, but I think that was rare. When we look at the San Bushmen and see that they tell us they've been doing this for 60,000 years, but they danced, and they would have to dance sometimes for 48 hours. I mean, they danced, and there was the repetitive sounds, and then they would go into the spirit world, is what they said. They traveled there. They learned things. They learned how to help their communities, and they came back with information that was indeed helpful, but they did pay a price for it, I might say. And of course, other groups had other techniques. But around the world, sacred plants were used, and they learned, for instance, in the Amazon, they knew so much about the plants in detail. And they tell us, the people in the Amazon, that if you want to know how to make a particular medicine, you use ayahuasca, and the plants then will tell you. And very often they say the plants will take them to various parts in the forest, and those plants will speak to them and tell them what they can do for them and how to combine them in order to make that possible. So it was a natural part of everyday life, really.
Yeah, and that's something that we did retain, because even today, you know, tens of thousands of years later, people use the same methods, whether that be, you know, a song or music or art or nature or drumming or plant medicine, meditations. These are all the same things that the ancients did, no?
They are, but of course we lost most of that for so long. And I think that's why in the 60s with the counterculture, when it was discovered, that when plant medicine was discovered, our culture had no way of knowing how to relate to it, and did some very destructive things to some of the cultures that they learned from and also to themselves. But it had been, the church did not want that, especially plant medicine. It didn't want any technique, and it didn't want any literature that even talked about going inward. And this was, I think we can't even begin to realize how detrimental that has been to Western culture, that we were cut off from that, and that, for example, that nature was cursed and we look at our climate crisis today, the ancients had a relationship with nature, just as they had a relationship with the plants. They knew that there were spirits in these plants, but they had to learn how to relate to them. It was a sacred relationship, and that's the same with nature. And when everything was done to honor nature, love nature, nourish nature, because they knew that that was their body too. But to love it, to respect it, to know what it meant to have a nature that could nourish them. And we lost that with the Deuteronomist and also with the Roman Church. We did lose that nature. Nature was cursed, and that has hurt the culture tremendously.
And, you know, one of the most fascinating things that I learned from Merchants of Light, when you were discussing our Stone Age ancestors and the sand bushmen and people who painted the great temple caves in Europe, and each culture lasted over 20,000 years. And you point out that there's no evidence of war in either group. So, you know, that's staggering to think about a culture that could exist for more than 20,000 years without war. I mean, it's mind-boggling. So what do you attribute this peacefulness to?
Well, you know, it is mind-boggling. I agree. And before I get to what might attribute to that is in the 20th century, the archaeologist Maria Gimbutas called Old Europe, that took in Eastern Europe, the Mediterranean, all the way to the Black Sea. And her discoveries were absolutely amazing, too, as were so many of the other scholars' discoveries in the 20th century. When she realized that here is a culture that has a symbolic system that is completely different from the Western patriarchal culture, and that she saw, too, that to go inward, a major symbol was the labyrinth, but also nature was seen as the goddess whom you love and take care of and honor as you do yourself, because she is within you. But I think that she said too, she felt there was, she said, I find no evidence whatsoever of war. And there are about 500,000 artifacts, and she hadn't seen any evidence of war, and in what I have seen, I didn't see it either. So that's phenomenal, too. And how many years? That was several thousand years. But I think it has to do with finding our balance in the heart culture, in the heart rituals, because the labyrinth in Old Europe is etched on almost every symbol they have, and the goddess herself is in the form of a temple on which the labyrinth is etched. And so you enter into that labyrinth, and you then, of course, experience the secrets of who we are, which is that as we enter the depth of who we are, we know that we are divine, and that we also are creative, and that we are immortal. And I think knowing that, focusing on that inner experience, which is deeply fulfilling, that we can create a community that is peaceful, or that at least we can. Now, other people will say, well, there weren't that many people, and they had enough water, and they had enough of the goods that they needed to survive, and there's something to that. But I do think that we will always survive more peacefully, or we have a better chance of it, if we know how to go within and experience that vastness. And that's us to understand, because we don't think in terms of the vastness of who we are, but when we have those inner experiences, we learn there's always a voice that's speaking to us. It's we are in touch with consciousness, and we want to live peacefully. There's something so profoundly loving and sensible about that experience that I think that inspires us to bring forth what is within us.
And we have seems like we have so much to learn, but it's right before us.
Yeah, you know, I know.
We talk about Merchants of Light, and I know that you're talking about, in part, you know, individuals that are working towards a greater consciousness. I know you're also talking about organized energy fields, but do you think that, in view of that, people today, obviously, more and more people are having near-death experiences. So do you think that it's possible that, the people today who are having these experiences that could be termed to be mystical, such as near-death experiences, might they be today's version of the ancient shamans?
I think we probably all are when we experience that other dimension. Usually we do. Once we experience it, we don't want to lose that relationship. So I think that is what a shaman is, one who develops a relationship with the other dimension. And that is really the heritage of every single one of us.
Yeah, so, I mean, in that respect, even many of our scientists today, they could be considered to be merchants of light in their own way, right? Especially the quantum physicists.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's interesting that some of the 60s kids who did work with the sacred plants became quantum physicists and quantum mathematicians. It's very, very interesting. And some of them were studying in science. And like Fritjof Capra, whom I quote in the book, he then had an experience on the beach in which he saw so clearly what he had been studying. But when you see it, so with that dimension, you understand how everything harmoniously works together and what a much larger purpose each of us has. It doesn't inspire violence, you know. And so I think that, yes, I think this is a time when we are rediscovering the ancient wisdom and trying to bring it into a new reality, trying to really experience this consciousness and live it so that we can create a better world. So many things are happening that wouldn't have happened 60 years ago, it seems to me, at least. So many of us are, many people are participating in the shamanic attempt to bring the dimensions together in a creative, loving way.
This may be a kind of a difficult question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. I mean, you've learned over the years through a series of tragic personal circumstances that there is no death as we know it. What do you think played a greater role in your understanding of this? Was it your many personal experiences or your research? Because you've spent a good part of your adult life engaged in this research, and yet you've had so many profound experiences. So which are more important? Can you pick one or the other?
Well, you know, the experiences are changed everything. I saw the world in a totally different way because I spent most of my life wondering if there is anything but matter. And I heard the scientists, and I hope they weren't right. But ultimately, I ended up being somewhat brainwashed by them. And there was I remember one shaman said to me, you know, he said, what's going to happen to you? You are going to start having experiences of what you're teaching. And I thought, well, I hope he's right. I'd love to do that because I was teaching the symbolism of various cultures, the Minoan culture, Greek culture. And indeed, I did. I had experiences within the labyrinth and so many other things that just it took me like it was about a week or so after one experience that I even realized that that's what I taught. That's what I knew rationally. But when I experienced it, it was so vast, so different that it took me a while to realize it was the same thing. So I think people can, if people who step into the spirit world understand so much about science in an intuitive way. They couldn't speak as scientists, but when they read the science, it's like, oh, yes, that's right. I understand that. That's true. So I wouldn't want to give up my research and my study because I now feel that with the experience, I can understand it better. But I think that also the study has taught me, as well as the experiences, that we are a whole mind. You know, we have many components of the brain, and the heart is part of it. And what has happened in our culture is that we have only developed one part of the brain, one of the components, which is the rational. And of course, we're capable of feeling. We know that, thank God, we love, that we have that life. But if we allow that heart to connect fully to the brain, we're very, very different people. So I think that the first theorist, or at least one of the most important theorists of symbolic language, was Jean-Baptiste Vico in the 1700s, and he saw very clearly. He didn't really know that the heart was a brain component, but he certainly knew that the symbolic brain was developed before the conceptual rational brain, and that it actually had a logic, a poetic logic. This is what we just said, oh, it's all nonsense, dreams, visions, hallucinations, nothing to that stuff. And in the 1700s, Vico was saying the symbolic language has a poetic logic. It reflects reality. It isn't going to lie. It reflects reality. And, of course, this is where the fairy tales and the myths and the dreams come from. And it feeds into the conceptual brain. The conceptual brain could not exist without the symbolic. And he said wholeness is that the human being must be whole. The wholeness of the human mind is that there'll be this wonderful, integral, and dynamic movement between the symbolic and the conceptual brain. So we don't want to give, and the conceptual to the symbolic, we don't want to give up any aspect of who we are, because what we want is wholeness. And so, but I don't think that rationally we can understand the world we live in without the visionary experiences.
You and others you sometimes refer to the organ of the soul, something that the ancients possessed. I mean, how would you define organ of the soul?
Well, you know, that is especially the Sufis, who are incredible cartographers of the ancient, of the spirit world and the symbolic world. And they say that we actually have an organ of soul, and we can, if once we really allow that to be developed within us, which the cultures we know have not done, that we can see as clearly into the spirit world. And they seem to know exactly the different dimensions and what happens in the spirit world, which we don't. But they say the organ of soul, which is symbolic, it's always the spirit speaks in symbolic language, and that's where so many churches have made a huge mistake in looking at everything historical, that spirit speaks symbolically. So we know that that organ that has that symbolic language and is able to feel and to love, it is the heart. So they say it's an actual organ, and if that's developed, you can travel into the spirit world and know exactly where you're going and what you're going to do. Mm. So it's interesting. They say you can see as precisely there as you can here, and that everything we do here is there. So I trust the Sufis, but I don't have that knowledge, that vision, but I think they're right.
Yeah. Well, it certainly sounds like that the less the theory, you know, that our brains act like filters, and, you know, it reduces the flow of this information. So the more we rely on the heart and the less we rely on the brain, the better we'll be, it seems. So, you know, that all makes sense. We are talking to Dr. Betty Kovach. The book we've been talking about is Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World. We have more to talk about with Dr. Kovach, so we're going to go to a break. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed gems developed by the parents of a young man who passed away are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org Grief and Loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to Signs of Life. For those just tuning in, we have been talking to Dr. Betty Kovach. Our sponsor tonight is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. And coming up now for free on September 29th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time in Brookline, Massachusetts, our afterlife discussion group will be meeting at the Spirit of Light downstairs meeting room. And on October 12th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and that's from 11 to noon Pacific, the Visionary Explorers group meets online. Our next webinar is scheduled for October 23rd at 9 p.m. Eastern. Afterlife Research as a Personal Resource will be presented by Dr. Julie Beischel and Mark Bacuzzi and will include a question and answer at the end of the presentation. We have a limited number of free member-only seats using the code JULIE2019. And for our non-member listeners tonight, we have half-price seating using the code MARK2019. Our annual winter grief retreat, Love Knows No Death, is open for enrollment at the super early bird rates that will expire this Monday, September 30th. Those super early bird rates are below our cost for you to attend. And to sweeten the pot, and in honor of Dr. Kovach's appearance on Signs of Life tonight and on our webinar last night, you can save an additional $50 using the code MERCHANTS50. This great and meaningful weekend has been organized to optimize the experiences of just 50 attendees who will work in small groups with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Angelina Diana, Doreen Malloy, and Renata Santarelli, along with Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti, who will be traveling all the way from Scotland as our special guest facilitator. Join us on this special weekend, January 10th through 12th, 2020, where you will learn that the miracle of death is not the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway to another chapter of continuing life. Our Holidays Past Raffle 2019 is up and running on our website. One chance is only $5, and you can be one of five winners of medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Janet Nohavik, Joanne Gerber, Dustin Livers, Angelina Diana, and Bobby Allison. And if you are planning to be in New York for the holidays, reserve your seats now for an evening of spirit communication at Holidays Path Smithtown with Joe Peretta and Gina Simone. And please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And back with Dr. Betty Kovach, the book, The Merchants of Light. Betty, the cave dwellers, just to go back to them, you know, again, I mean, it's the caves were not simply used as a means of shelter. They were more like sanctuaries where rituals took place and visionary experiences. What's always fascinated me is when in these cave cultures that were separated by great distances, you know, before any means of travel was possible, they have very similar themes in their paintings and their stories and their rituals. Is this part of the cosmic consciousness, how we somehow share our views and our thoughts and our hopes and prayers with others, you know, through non-physical means?
You know, this has been such a huge question in the research, because the truth of the matter is, all around the world, we see similarities. In the cave cultures and later, before we knew that we were traveling and had contact with each other, there is so much work now on the evidence that there was a worldwide culture during the Ice Age. It was a seafaring culture, and that it was probably destroyed by a comet hitting the Earth around 10,800, but so many people did survive. That's what many people are thinking now, given the evidence they have, but so much more research needs to be done. But there are maps. Charles Hapgood did work. He's a cartologist, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 years ago. I don't remember exactly when his book came out. And he saw maps long before we could make those kinds of maps all around the world. So there's some real evidence that we did have contact around the world. Especially, you know, when we see pyramids are now, we know they're all around the world. The Cyclopean or the megalithic structures were all around the world. So that's one possibility. And it has growing evidence for that. The other thing is that our psyche is, of course, the same, and the organizing principles are the same, and they're expressed in different ways culturally. I think it's not really possible to answer the question exactly how much each one influenced, But certainly their stories are the same all around the world, fairy tales and so on. And people used to say, well, you know, that's through travel. And I think it is true. But I think it is also true that we have the same organizing principles within our psyche. And even if we heard a story from someone else, we wouldn't accept it unless it fit, unless it excited us and inspired us because it was working according to those principles. So I think it's both, but both. I think both.
Yeah, and the pyramids are fascinating, and the megalithic structures all around the world. They had this knowledge of sacred geometry, you know, and they built the structures in a way that they were conducive to exploration of other realms. They were, in a sense, they were lasting reminders for future generations, giving us the clues to discovery. That would last through the ages, right?
Yes, I love that. I think that what I sense is that these ancestors, and what's funny is that they were called merchants of light in some literature. It's kind of interesting that their goal was to save the knowledge of who we are and what we are capable of and how to work with other dimensions. I think it's absolutely our heritage to create in the material world with and in harmony with the spirit dimension. We've been so split off that it's taken us a long time to even know that it's our heritage to always be in touch with it. And these ancestors wanted to leave, as you say, these hints or this information all around the world. And especially after the great disaster of flooding, you know, Francis Bacon wrote The New Atlantis, and that was such a surprise to me because I had never read that, and I thought Pisha was coming up with kind of a funny name of merchants of light. And then I saw that Francis Bacon had called these people, these priests or these cosmic consciousness philosophers who lived in the light. It was sort of that was the way he described them, that after the great disaster, they traveled all around the world to bring civilization back to people, and they were the ones who worked so hard to save our knowledge of who we are, and that the knowledge that we are immortal and divine and creative, that is what we are, who we are, and they wanted us to know that, and they didn't want us to be split off as we have been in Western culture. And it's so interesting to me that Pishta, who never would have read that kind of thing, that in his vision, he was told merchants of light, and that they are here now because they know that we will make it, and they don't come unless they know that we are capable of saving our planet and ourselves and integrating this knowledge that they have saved for us, you might say, for centuries, and people all over the planet. The merchants of light appear in many different places around the planet is what is so interesting. So that was so phenomenal to me. And Pishta, when he had these visions, I mean, he was so definite about it. He said, of course we're going to make it. This never happens. He said, this does not happen until the people on the planet are ready for it to happen and want it to happen. And he would say, there will be zero failures on their part, which means we're ready. And I always thought, zero failure, come on. But he was so insistent on it. Well, of course, we make a lot of failures in what we're doing. But in terms of the goal, he said, we will make it. And I think that's and once we can really know and experience, bring back that way of living in wisdom and heart-centered consciousness, that we will want to create and be able to create a very different world. And I know Pishti said once he had passed on to the other side, his insistence that we know that we are capable of so much. In fact, he said, you know, when his dad was sitting there looking at the horizon, the ocean and the horizon met, and he said, and Dad, even that is not the limit. It's just that we limit ourselves, as I did in that vision, thinking, oh, I can't create a world, And then the voice said, you just did create a world in which you cannot create. And that's the kind of world we've been creating for so long, and they were not even creators. If we could really know that again, and I think we're going to know it, because it's not just a fluke that all of these scholars in the 20th century began to discover who we really are and what the roots of our civilization really are. I think everything is coming together. The near-death experiences, as I say in the book, there are so many things that are coming together at this time. Even the emergence of these dark forces throughout our planet, we have to see that, because that's the world we have created. And once we see it and we know what it is, and that we can create different worlds, I think we will. And I think this is the time that we can do it. The I Ching, by the way, that we were to look at, and Ishvan said, this is, said that Pishti told him, this is your work, and it's the work of the earth. Read it carefully to work on what is decayed. So we must see it and know its dangers. And then the I Ching says, it pays to cross the great water. Great success. It furthers one to cross the great water. But what was coming through from the spirit dimension, especially with this energy fields and the light and the people being born who will help us, because we are ready to be helped, that we will. It is one crisis. It is a huge crisis. But that may be what is needed to draw us into that ancient realization of who we are and what kind of world we really can create.
Yeah, and we certainly are living in a very fragile time, and I think it's fair to say that our ancestors are aware that we're at this tipping point.
Oh, they are.
And they've done their part. Now it's up to us, right?
Well, I think, yeah, and they'll be with us the whole way. I really do think that. And yeah. I don't know what we're going to have to go through, but I think the more we can become conscious, the more we can enter into the wisdom that is available to us, I think the less we'll have to suffer.
We have been talking with Dr. Betty Kovach. The book, Merchants of Light, The Consciousness as Changing the World. Whether you like history or you like spirituality or both, this is a book that you need to read, because it's a chronicle, goes back in time and tells you where we're going, you know, as a human species. So it's available now, Merchants of Light. I recommend you pick it up. Betty, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. Look forward to you coming back again.
Thank you so much, both of you, Bob and Fran.
Okay, have a good night.
Thank you, you too.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.